Yep, yep, ghetto boys is back and reloaded. All in your mouth, yeah, now deep throated. This is for the streets, the real, the railroaded, the disenfranchised, the truth, the scapegoated.
And they know it, we speak the truth, so they quote it, cause we wrote it. The north, south, the east coast, it's the GB knocking, we're keeping your head bobbing. It ain't no stopping.
And once the beat drops in, violence, the system is so corrupt, they throw the rock out their hands and then blame it on us. It's GB, don't get it twisted. On code and we ain't dancing for no buttermilk biscuits.
It's Willie D, y'all. Scarface is in the building. Collectively, we are the Ghetto Boys.
Reloaded.
Reloaded with another episode of information and instructions to help you navigate through this wild, crazy, beautiful world. In the studio, Chingo Bling.
Brr, brr, brr. I need an air horn.
Say, man.
God damn, Chingo. You know you're one of my favorite people on Earth, right?
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, for real. I just don't get why you wore the Chingo Bling t-shirt, though.
Man,
we fucking
my wife,
know who you are,
bro. I know,
bro.
Man. I told my wife it's going to be overdoing it. And she's like, well, we ain't got time. Throw it on.
Is that ever weird to you when you wear when your own?
Because
you
had
your own shirt on
yeah,
the other day.
It's kind of creepy,
and,
man.
And I had my shirt on. I jogged in my own shirt a couple of days ago. I was hesitant about wearing it, though.
I'm going to wear my own shirt, but Chingo, that's doing too much.
It feels like too much self-promotion, you know. I at least didn't wear that matching hat with it, so.
Chingo Bling.
But if you won't wear your own, how do you expect somebody else to wear it?
True that, see? True that.
That's what Slim do better than anybody. What's Slim that? Thug.
Oh, yeah, he'll rock
man,
his shit
Slim
like
Thug,
no big
wear
deal.
That boss gear like it ain't shit. Like,
shit, he promoting the fuck out of
this
it,
mine,
though.
You know?
Yeah, that's my shit.
Yeah.
Love Slim. Man, Chingo, what's been up, bro?
Man, just got back from Denver.
I know. I follow you.
Thank you. Been doing stand-up.
Bro, you know I came to see you at the Improv one time.
Yes, sir. Yeah, you came backstage. Yeah, I was like, man, face. I was like,
man, Chingo. Fucking Chingo Bling, man. And then he went from, like, rapping his ass off to being, like, one of the funniest people on Earth, dude.
How does that happen, man? How does one pivot from a successful rap career, not just a rap career, but a successful rap career, into a successful comedy career?
Man, I always wanted to do stand-up. And my raps were always pretty comedic. Like, I was always having fun because I wasn't no gangster. You know what I mean? So I already knew if I wanted to get in a rap game, I was going to have to come from a different angle.
Right.
You know, enough people were being serious and all that already. Yeah. So while some people were talking about trapping, whipping, cooking, I was like, well, we did tamales.
Talking about the tamales.
What?
Yeah, he was talking about tamales.
Yeah, I was
rapping.
You know,
you had the tamale truck and all that stuff way back before having a food truck was popular.
Yeah,
a tamale truck.
Yeah, I ain't gonna lie, we did it more like as a
joke.
Almost like a record label
was
promotion.
Good,
yeah, we had it parked on the side of the freeway, like at one of the flea markets. We had to deal with the flea markets. It was like a billboard. It was
serious? Are you fucking?
No, I swear.
No, he's serious.
Oh, God
I
damn.
Swear. We're just trying to be like guerrilla marketing because, you know, at the time, you just had to get in where you fit in.
I ain't mad at
But I got a chance to start doing stand up. So I was able to take the fact that I was comfortable on stage already, take the fact that I kind of knew how to write somewhat, and then I had to pivot and figure out, okay, I've been wanting to do stand-up. It seems like a fun job. Yeah. Something I can extend my career further and not have to, you know, be in one lane.
75 years old rapping.
And be in
one
lane.
I know the feeling.
Hey, I'm 42, so, I mean, you know, I'm up on stage.
Do you write your jokes down or you just fucking get up there and just say some shit like me?
It's a combination. You got to leave some space for improv.
Okay.
So just like when you're in a booth, you want to might be loose with your ad-libs or try your delivery a little different way. Same thing. You know, you go on stage with the joke. The joke's always evolving. You're always polishing.
Dude, it's so fucking funny,
editing.
Dog. It's so fucking funny, man. Like, I be watching your, your Instagram page, right?
I apologize.
That boy put a sombrero on or a big-ass cowboy hat, man, and just go the fuck off, man.
Funny-ass shit, bro. How do you feel about the comedians that write their jokes down on paper and then pull it out during the stand-up routine and tell the joke?
I think they call that, like, alt style, like alternative. It's like an Austin style. A lot of times they cross their arm. They had an arm cross, and they, you know, what else do we talk about? Let's see. And it's like a style that don't fit me because I came up off a Comic View. I came up like some Eddie Murphy, you know what I mean? Like Eddie Murphy Raw Delirious when I was a little bitty kid. My dad taught me how to cuss in Spanish. Eddie taught me how to cuss in English. And I was like, this man hopping out of a helicopter wearing leather, talking so much mess. And I was like,
you can say shit on here, bro.
Perfect. I was like, how do I become a professional shit talker? It just changed my life. That's why, like, my dream, before music, my dream was, like, comedy. And I always liked show business. So before I got into rapping, I was trying to, like, be somebody's manager, figure out how I could be the A&R, how I could be the DJ with a hot mixtape series.
You know, you can rap in Spanish, bro.
Yeah.
That's fucking dope, man.
Yeah, yeah. It's...
That's dope. I wish I could rap in Spanish with it.
My Spanish ain't as good as my English, though, but I get by. Man, I did all Spanish comedy in Mexico one time. I got reminded that I was American. Like, my whole perspective on life growing up here in Houston is I'm a Mexican-American. So I was viewing the world as Mexican-American. I go out to Mexico to do all Spanish comedy. Soon as I land, the Uber driver... I see some people out there begging. And I ask the Uber driver, I'm like, hey, man, what's going on? Unemployment? He's like, yeah, man, these are our neighbors from the South. They come over here. They bring their problems. We need to build a wall and make Honduras and El Salvador pay for it.
What the fuck?
Yeah. They were like, we got to be Mexico first. We already got our own problems. We got our own unemployment. We got our own taxes. We got our own government corruption to deal with. And now we got more people. And I was like, you can't say that in America. He's like, we still got freedom of speech.
No shit, man.
Wow.
So I went to go do the show all Spanish, and I just saw how rusty. My Spanish is cool over here.
Yeah.
But in Mexico, it's like, oh, you're like,
who the fuck is this guy?
Where you from?
Really?
Yeah.
So it's two different kinds of Spanish.
It's just they hear the accent, man. If it's not your, like my wife's Spanish over there in Mexico, she went with me. They were like, oh, okay, are you from here? And she's like, no. My parents just taught me that good Spanish.
Oh, did you get shunned for not being as, I guess, fluent with your Spanish in Mexico?
But you are fluent with your Spanish, though, right?
Yes. Over here, it's considered fluent. Mm-hmm. But like Willie said, over there, they'll call you like pocho.
What's a pocho?
it basically means
wait,
like...
Wait, can black people say pocho?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah, I guess, yeah. It's not derogatory like that. It basically means like... It's almost like a, it's not like a bastard in a way, but it's kind of like, oh, you from over there. You're
a gringo.
You from that. Yeah, you from, exactly.
What's a gringo?
It's like you American. You're not one of us.
It's a derogatory term, derogatory Spanish
term.
It's like saying,
almost like cracker in a way. In a way.
Boy, you can't.
In a way, I'm just telling y'all what the word is. I'm not saying context.
It's all about context.
We have context.
There you go. First of all,
according to the majority of America, I'm oppressed and I'm a victim anyway. So there's no way I could even hurt anybody's feelings.
God damn it.
I'm not the oppressor.
And he's a Trump supporter.
I mean, Get the fuck out of here, Chingo.
Yeah, I did a 180. I'm glad you brought it up early in the interview.
Now, how did this transformation happen? How did you go from, like, being a mainstay in hip-hop to being Trump
hardcore.
Supporter?
Exactly. How did I go from being Mr. They Can't Deport Us All to... Well, we might want to listen.
Trump can support it. You said in one of your albums is titled... They Can't Deport Us All. First you did They Can't Deport Us All in 2016.
Did an album.
And then 2017 you did Trump Can't Deport Us All.
No, I didn't do that.
You didn't do the Trump? Trump Can't Deport Us All.
Nah, it might have been an article where they tried to like put something like that in there. But basically, you know, I went from being Mr. They Can't Deport Us All, Mr. Like, you know, man, they holding us down. You know, no person is illegal. You know, if you want a border and you want walls, you racist. America should be able to take in everybody, all the refugees, all the immigrants. That was like my first thing, right? Like, because at the time, George Bush and everything, they kept scapegoating immigrants for everything. Every time I turn on the news, it was like, the border issue, the border this. And me being the son of immigrants, I didn't like how the media kept trying to scapegoat us. They kept trying to blame stuff on us. So I was very, like, in your face. I had a billboard off 610. They can't deport us all. I did a deal with Asylum.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I did a deal with Asylum Records, and I told them, this is what I want to name the album. And now fast forward. Now Trump's running for office. He comes down that elevator. He does that speech. I could have swore he called us rapists.
He did.
They're bringing guns. Yeah, they're bringing drugs.
Yeah, we don't know what they have.
Bringing criminals.
Yeah, basically. So I was not a fan of this dude. I used to like him as a kid. Like, oh, he's a dude with the buildings and the book and the movies. And, you know, he's
money.
Just, yeah, he's Trump. Yeah. We would rap about him.
Yeah.
It was nothing.
Now I fucking hate Trump.
Yeah, so I did too.
I didn't realize he was so fucking stupid, but go ahead.
Yeah, so I didn't like him either at first. I was like, man, fuck this dude. I made shirts, koozies, hats, everything that said, fuck Donald Trump. Nice. I sold a gang of them things.
Nice.
All kinds of stuff. Fuck Donald Trump. Chingo bling for president.
Chingo bling.
And so then fast forward, 2020 happened. And I was at the house. My tour was canceled. So now I'm starting to listen to, like, it's a dude named Scott Adams. He has a podcast. He came up making this comic called Dilbert. Right? So he would go on daily deconstructing the news and showing how the media can be biased, showing how news could sometimes leave context out, showing how they could frame you. They can make you look however they want to make you look. And he was going basically debunking some of the stuff where it's like, well, you know how they said Trump said this about the troops? Well, it was all based off anonymous sources and this and that. And just slowly showing me that sometimes the news be lying, right? Sometimes there's an agenda. So that basically allowed enough space for me to keep an open mind where I'm like, okay, if they framing this dude and they lying about this and they lied to me about that, let me pay attention to what he's saying. So now I look at it like, even though he talks like a truck driver from Queens, right? But he says things like, look, we got to bring back manufacturing. We had lowest unemployment. We don't need to be starting these new wars. So we had no new wars. Al-Qaeda didn't want no smoke. ISIS didn't want no smoke. Pretty much had things pretty stable, unless you watch the news, which made it seem like, oh, another bombshell. Oh, can you believe this dude? But it's like unemployment's low. You know what I'm saying? He donated, or he's giving money to this, or he's helping that. The border's under control, even though it was like, man, they got kids in cages. Now we got kids in cages, people under bridges, all kinds of shit. So
and
now,
we just left Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Not so. We, but they just left Afghanistan. I don't put me in the we when it comes to they. I don't.
Me in the we with the they. Got it.
On the topic of employment, why do people, I guess conservatives, so readily give Trump credit for employment being so great? When he inherited that from the previous administration that was ran by Barack Obama.
That is true.
Why does Trump get so much credit for the economy when he didn't do anything?
He ain't did shit. I can't think of nothing he did.
He didn't do anything to stabilize the economy. He just basically walked into a situation that was handed to him.
Well, I agree. A lot of times presidents inherit good things and bad things from the prior, right? Because the way economics works, it takes a while, right? You get the remnants.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we look at who's in office now, I mean, we could try and blame Trump for, like, what's happening now. We could try and figure out what to blame in terms of, like, who do we blame for what's happening now?
What's happening now, Chingo?
Well, let me back up a little bit.
Go ahead.
To answer Willie's question about, like, why the conservatives give him so much credit. I believe, from my knowledge, I'm not an economic expert, but...
But Willie is. But go ahead.
So yeah, we just shooting the shit, right? It's, you know, I'm all layman's terms. So Trump's economic team were people like Dr. Peter Navarro, who they would, like, their equations and how they do their formulas and shit is considered, like, America First policies. So right now, they're criticizing the Biden administration because... inflation. They printing $1.9 trillion for this, $1.9 trillion for that. It's like trillions, trillions. All that spending, they're gonna have to find a way to cover that. In other words, are you gonna tax everybody?
Not to cut you off, but make me understand this. If you printing money, what the fuck difference does it make?
Well,
like if I had a money printer,
Yeah. Like,
I just print some fucking money, man, and just go get it. You feel me? Like, what puts you in debt when you fucking print the money? And I may be stupid for asking that question, but I don't understand. I print fucking money. I got money coming out the ass.
The more you print, in layman's terms, the more you print, the less value that paper gonna have. So, for example, Venezuela went from being one of the richest countries with oil coming out the ground.
Yeah, but that's just this country, Chingo, that's fucking making the denomination of numbers, you know, putting the numbers on currency. You feel me? Because look at this. Like the Iraqi dinar, that shit ain't worth a penny right now. Okay? But if you look at the money that in spots like, let's say,
London,
Kuwait. You know, that like that money, they putting the denominations on these dollars and they making them higher. But it's just a number printed on a fucking piece of paper, you know?
Well, I'll give you the best example I could. One of our biggest, quote-unquote, exports is the U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar is the standard across the globe. Everybody got to translate their stuff according to us. It's like we're the ruler, like we're the measurement, right? Now, the way that happens, the way we kind of sustain it, the way we like export our dollar is you have like Japanese and different countries, they got to buy like government bonds or whatever off our dollar. Well, they already got enough that they want. They don't want no more. So the problem is once China and like Saudi Arabia, whoever steps away from the dollar, now you can't just print it. Now you got to back it up. Now you got to print it and say, okay, how do we balance this? Do we tax people? Like, what are we going to do? You know, especially if our, if we're not producing as much as a country, if we're not exporting. Because right now, China's strategy is they flooding us with all their influence. They flooding us with all their products. You know what I mean? All that manufacturing, both Republicans and Democrats sold us out. They propped up China and their government, and they sent all them jobs and shit. We don't make damn near anything no more.
Yeah, and that really is a great segue to one of the points that I wanted to make. Americans, specifically conservatives, brag about being patriotic. They brag about how important the flag is. Respect the flag.
Yeah, yeah,
respect
yeah.
the flag. Mm-hmm. USA, USA, USA. And every chance they get, they're cutting deals with China to have their products manufactured in China. They taking jobs overseas away from Americans, and then they're blaming immigrants. They're blaming black people. They're blaming everybody but the people that's in control that's pulling the strings.
Yeah. Yeah.
How does knowing this translate into continued support for this party?
Yeah.
So, and I'm not even saying that the Democrats are any better. I'm just trying to get an understanding of how is it that you can play both sides of the fence? How is it that a person, not you specifically, but how does a person play both sides of the fence? On one hand, you say you're all about USA, it's America first, respect the flag.
Meanwhile, they're selling us out.
Meanwhile, you're sending jobs overseas and you're paying for your products. And you're getting services from China.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work out?
So my thing is this. I'm not one of those diehard Republicanists. I'm lifelong Democrat. I voted Republican one time. Now, what I'm learning—
For Donald Trump?
Yeah. So first time I didn't vote for him. Hold on, Scarface. So check this out. Let me try to answer your question. So the way I look at this Republican Party is you got what they call rhinos. Right? The warmongers, the globalists, they call them neocons. They sold us out. They working with Democrats, some, to sell us out. There's good Democrats, too. So they call that the Uniparty, right?
Uniparty.
They work in cahoots. So those are called the rhinos, Republican in name only. They're not America first. Now you got a handful of the new cats that are like not your traditional Republican. For example, JFK was Democrat, right? By modern day standards, they might try to consider him a Republican just because he was like pro Second Amendment and some of the shit he stood for. they probably like he wouldn't really fit in. So I feel like a lot of the extremes in the Democrat Party push me away.
Yeah, but the thing about JFK is what's consistent about him that is similar to other Democrats is that he was at least appeared to be for black people, like black people's interest. At least act like he cared about black people's interest. If you act like you care about black people's interest, by default, you are a Democrat right now. Right now. You're a Democrat. If you act like you care about black people or you care about the poor, automatically you're gonna fall into the Democratic category.
Yeah, that's their marketing.
That's automatic. That's their market. That's right, exactly. Messaging, yeah. And the Republican market is fuck the blacks, you know, fuck the poor, you know, like bootstrap. It's all about, you know, going out there and working for what you want. Meanwhile, they're taking all of the benefits that come from the government. Anything free, Republicans getting it. They're getting the tax breaks. You know, they're getting all of this free stuff that they complain about others getting. And the reason why I suspect that they complain is because they don't want to share the free shit that they're getting. You know? So I'm still trying to get to, like, the aha moment where you, like, started to say Trump is my guy, because just the propaganda piece, just the propaganda piece alone wouldn't sway me one way or the other, because I know both sides play the propaganda game. Yeah. Like, the Democrats play the propaganda game. You know, they skew the message. And the Republicans do the same thing. The way Fox takes stuff and molding and shit.
Oh, yeah. Fox is owned by the Murdochs.
CNN does the same thing.
Yeah, Fox is owned by the Murdochs. And Fox, if you notice, they didn't cover the election audits. So a lot of Republican and conservative people or MAGA.
They didn't the election audits.
Basically, like, for example, in Arizona, you had, like, state senators.
Yeah, I know.
That whole thing, like, they wouldn't even address it, you know. They owned by Rupert Murdoch and the Murdoch kids. So they Australian. They out to make money. A dude named Mike Lindell that owns that My Pillow company, he wanted to...
A piece of shit, too.
Well, I like him.
You do?
Yeah, I love him.
What do you like about him?
Man, I'm reading his book right now. This dude went from a crackhead to a CEO. And I feel like his book can help a lot of people with addiction and all that. Like,
but can't you like the book without liking him?
I mean, I really do like him. I mean, what's bad about him?
Well, he's a racist.
Michael Lindell's racist?
He definitely is.
How is he racist?
Yeah, you didn't. What do you do? You hadn't heard it. Huh?
What do you do? I hadn't heard. What did Michael Lindell do? The pillow guy.
He's made some interesting statements. But yeah,
okay, I hadn't heard that.
So I know that if he don't like me, damn sure ain't gonna like you.
Damn, okay.
Yeah, and how does that... Explain to me how this works.
Yeah, it's a lot to unpack.
Like when you switched over and said, man, I'm riding with Trump.
Yeah.
You must have caught hell from your own people.
Some, yeah, a lot. A lot of them were trolls. A lot of people were like, I'm glad I never used to bump you anyway. Or I never did like you anyway. Or I'm glad I never went to your shit. Right? Mm-hmm. But then you have a lot of Latinos that are like, hey, man, you know, we feel that we do need, you know, we need America to be a superpower and we need to have a strong economy. Or, like, we agree what you're saying. Thank you for speaking up. For example, if Chingo Bling was a place, it might be the Rio Grande Valley, meaning it's Mexican as fuck. It's Texan. You know what I mean? It's right there by the border just because of the way I would express myself in my art, right? So the Rio Grande Valley has gone red. Like, they live on the border. And they not liking these new border policies. So they got a Republican mayor now in the McAllen, Texas. A lot of their counties.
So how do they not like how can they not like that?
It's affecting them adversely, negatively. Like,
so, but you would vote for Republican. Those are the main motherfuckers that's trying to seal the borders, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
We got fentanyl coming through that border. We got terrorists, a couple, I'm sure, you know, all kind of people from all over the place. We don't even know.
So how do you...
We got to at least know.
But how do you rationalize you and so millions of other people of Mexican descent arriving in the U.S., some by illegal means, getting over here, and then saying... okay, not y'all, not right y'all, way. Not yeah, y'all. Yeah, yeah, y'all, yeah. y'all, everybody else got to come the right way, yeah. even though me and my family and all of us, we got over here illegally.
Yeah. Well, I'm the
rest
son
of y'all, y'all yeah. got, we going to build this wall to keep y'all, yeah, you know. How do you rationalize that?
Yeah, it sound crazy, but, you know, especially coming from a son of immigrants. I mean, at the end of the day, man, you know, we live here. We pay taxes here. I got three daughters. In terms of, like, for example, ain't no country in the world you could just pull up illegally. Like, you can't go to Germany. You can't go damn near nowhere, you know, where you just walk up in and don't nobody ask you, hey, bro, what you got? What are your intentions? How long you going to be here? Like, no matter what, it's going to be some kind of checks and balances.
That's true.
Now, I would argue that some people, whether it's Wall Street, you know, it's good for them. A lot of these big corporations get cheap labor. Some people get more voters. A lot of people, if you're globalist and you want to just erase borders, a lot of people would love to see, like, man, leave that bitch wide open. Especially if you're China and you want to destabilize America and you just want, like, you don't know who's coming in. It's buku dope coming through because you got these little families and kids and shit, women getting sex trafficked. You got kids coming through there. They go to Central America and they tell the families, look, send your children because it's going to be easier to get them in first. Once we get them in the system, they can send back for you. So these kids probably don't even make it. It's just not a good situation. I think it'll be safer for everybody if it's one of those things, like, for example, how Trump had it. Trump had it to where, yeah, he's an asshole and yeah, he's firm and he's telling y'all going to have to, when you await your court date for your asylum, you got to wait in Mexico. He cut a deal with Mexico and he said, y'all got to help me put some troops right here. And when we got to send them over there and they got to await court date in Mexico City. We're not just going to ship them to Chicago and D.C. and Maryland somewhere. And hopefully they show up for their court date. Because you got MS-13, 18th Street Gang. It's, you know, people competing for jobs. Like, even in the black community, I mean, there's people that's like, well, I would have got the job, but, you know, old boy from Guatemala came through and it just lowers the wages. It affects us.
Here's why I don't agree with the wall. Yes, we do need to protect the resources that we have here. Yes, we are spread it too thin. We need our shit for us, right? And yes, when immigrants come over here, they do take jobs from black people and other people that's here and who's already paid their dues. Here's why I disagree with the wall, though. I disagree because I don't believe that the wall is going to stop anybody from coming over here because there's deals being cut at the border. There's deals being cut to get people over here. If you paid a certain amount of price, you can get in here. So a lot of it is just being able to pay the fee. Yes, having it wide open, more people are coming over, but it's not that those people are not going to come over. It's that those people are coming over without paying. They're coming over and they're circumventing the hustle. They're getting around the hustle, the people that are set up shop. A lot of the people... One of the reasons why they're getting over here has a lot to do with border control. The people who are working in border control who are selling us out daily, who getting a check from the government, from the U.S. government. That's why, just like cocaine and all these other drugs, the reason why this so-called fake war on drugs does not work is because a lot of people who are in position of power, position in authoritative positions, they are allowing it to happen. They're getting paid under and over the table. This is why you can't stop it. So there is no war on drugs.
Yeah.
There's a war on us. There ain't no war on drugs.
Yeah, if we want, exactly. especially when the CIA is dropping off that dope so they can get that money for their covert war in Nicaragua. They was trying to stop communism, and they tortured a DEA agent. Like, I know all about that shit. But to answer your question about, like, the border, right now, the only ones benefiting, the ones that's making buku bread, is the cartels. The cartels are basically Al-Qaeda of Mexico. That's the ISIS of Mexico. They terrorizing my people. You know what I'm saying? They making so much money. they tagging people with wristbands, who owes money. You got to pay a tax to every region. They're making like millions of dollars a day. And the way they do it is they distract the border patrol, like the little families and kids. They'll drop a kid over the fence, boom. You know what I mean? And I hear they got to come play babysitter, and you got the Venezuelans. They trying to help this lady from drowning. They processing these people. They got them out there in the heat. They don't know where to put them. Meanwhile, boom, they running that fentanyl, which comes from China. And speaking of war on drugs, we know who's providing all the fentanyl from China. Basically, China's killing thousands of Americans via fentanyl with this opioid crisis or whatever. They won't do shit about it. We just keep buying their stuff.
And who's allowing it to come over here?
It's coming through that border, so
yeah, it's open. Americans are allowing it to come over.
Whoever
here.
Got that open border?
Americans, that's who got it.
Open border policy.
They're allowing it to come over here. I mean, listen, man, these are the same people who went and found a president in a hole in a desert, another president,
a dictator, in
a whole different country, in a hole somewhere. You think they don't know what's going on?
Yeah.
You think they can't stop a few people from crossing their own border?
Just like they couldn't find Osama bin Laden. He's 6'6". He had a damn machine. He was on a dialysis machine. You know, yeah. They like, we think he's in Afghanistan. He was in Pakistan the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And we was over there probably for the poppy fields for the heroin.
Well, you know, before he was over there, he was at the White House.
Yeah,
you know,
we trained exactly, him.
You know?
The CIA, all these people were trained because the Russians were in Afghanistan. So we had to go. Back then, we called them freedom fighters. Back then, it was like, look, man, these are freedom fighters. We're going to train them. Whoop-de-whoop. Now, fast forward, it's like, well, shit, now they bucking up to us. Now they Al-Qaeda.
Man, you know, I was just thinking, man, you know, the Republicans,
Italian,
I'm sure,
man,
they've reached out to you, right? The Republican Party, they've reached out to you. They had
in some chapter, some capacity.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the White House.
It's coming. Because here's the deal, and this is why I say that. You're not one of those type of Republicans who are hard-nosed, hard-ass, you know, who hate these people. You are more about policy than people. It sounds like to me that you're more in agreement with Republican policies as opposed to saying that I'm only voting Republican because I don't like these people.
I don't like these people. Well, I'm going to just say this. Not all Republicans. A lot of them, probably half of them, full of shit. Now, the ones that are America first, those kind of economic policies, I feel benefit the people.
Right.
So, for example, George Lopez. He has totally different politics than me. Maybe about 2 years ago, we might have agreed on most of the stuff, right? But he's over there promoting Governor Newsom as if he's doing a good job. He was bending over backwards for Biden. I just can't rock with that. I just feel like, you know.
First of all, George Lopez is an American treasure.
Yeah, you know, he's a great artist. I love his stuff.
George Lopez is an American treasure. I mean,
these opinions are Chingo Bling.
But he's a much better person than Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a horrible person. This is why, and listen, some of the Trump policies I could have rocked with, but I don't like Trump as a person because he's a divider. You know, like, right now, this country is divided across racial lines.
All kind of lines.
I mean, yeah, but
vax, non-vax, mask, no mask, flag, flag's racist, flag ain't racist.
And that's true.
Yeah.
But especially race, every single day. Race is the one thing that don't go away. Race, right? Some of these other things we're going to get past. We're going to get past vaccinations. We're going to get past the pandemic. We're going to get past all of that. Race is going to still be an issue. And when you got the leader of the country who is flaming the fire instead of trying to put it out, that's a problem. And that's what Trump did. He flamed the fire. He created more division.
I feel like Obama did that.
I feel
all that stuff started when Obama came in.
I
want to hear what he means.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
I feel like we were more unified before Obama.
Why?
I voted for Obama. What did Obama do to create the division? Man, I felt like, I don't know if it was like the media making it happen, but it just sure did seem like, you know, with what happened in Ferguson, it just felt like everything became about race. It was like we became obsessed with race. Meanwhile, he wasn't doing much for the black community. He was more worried about the gay community and all the other communities.
Yeah.
And he was deporter in chief. He deported more people than anybody other president combined.
Yeah. And all of that's true. But what is not true is that he created the racial problem, the issue. Because what happened is that people saw an America that was not the America they grew up loving, where white people had all the power and you always looked at a white man as the leader of the free world. Now you got a black man. It was cool to be mayor, governor.
Yeah, president. That was great.
City council, chief of police. But now you got a black president. This is the commander in chief, and he's black. And this is where a lot of white people started losing their fucking minds.
That's true.
That's what created it. It was the jealousy. It was the jealousy of a black man running this country is what stoked the flames. It was what fanned the flames. In fact, what lit the fire. That's what started it.
I would argue that a certain percentage of the people that weren't Obama fans may have been for other reasons. You know what I'm saying? Like, we think he's too socialist, or we think he's a Marxist, or something. Not necessarily race.
Let me ask you a question, Chingo. Would you vote for a president because he's Hispanic?
Nah.
You would not?
Nah, not just because of that. Mm-mm. For example, somebody couldn't just go up there and be like, hey, my name is Jorge Bush III. Vote for me. Or my name is Beto O'Rourke. Vote for me. I'm coming for your guns. I hear what you're alluding to,
but that's not what... People. That's not why people voted for Barack. Barack didn't get voted.
He had a lot going for him.
A lot of black people wasn't voting for Barack Obama just because he was black. There's a lot of black people that ran for president before Barack Obama who was not qualified. And black people totally ignored.
No, if black people did vote for Barack Obama because he was black.
No, that's a lie. Not you, Willie.
Okay, all right.
Man, why you gotta keep on saying the shit like
not
that?
Not you, Willie. Because it wasn't Willie.
Not you, Willie. And why the fuck you looking at me like that, man?
Hold on, man.
Wait a minute. This look like some gangster shit you doing, man.
In that lighting.
He looking at me like, not you, Willie.
I'm fucking finished, bro.
Goddamn, man.
I done pissed him off.
Shit.
So, I'm just saying, Willie, like, let me just say what I gotta say,
okay,
Willie.
Go ahead and say what you gotta say. All right, go ahead.
So, a lot of people voted for Barack Obama because he was black.
Right.
Like, nine times out of ten, the people did not understand policy whatsoever, and they still don't.
You know what I love about Barack? Is that when he was running as a black man, he never once said...
I'm a black man.
Thank you.
Never said it.
He never once was like, vote for me because I'm black.
But he also said that he's not the president for black America. He's the president of the United States of America.
Yeah.
And that's with me, I'm going to be the president for black America.
Well,
Because I feel like...
Go ahead. I want to hear what you feel like.
I'm not saying shit now.
Come on, man. I'm on your side.
You're never on my side, Willie.
Context is everything, man. This guy right here, man. Come on, man.
Okay, so.
You're incurable.
This the running joke. It's like the sitcom. This is the running gag.
Nah, man.
Go ahead. Let me hear it, man.
I just feel like, you know, I'd be the president for black America because I feel like I know what black America need, bro. We have been shortchanged so long, and we don't get nothing.
Base gonna be like, first thing we need to do is build that wall.
Nah, the Hispanics are
welcome. If you want to help black America, it's black and brown, bro.
But you know, I hear exactly what you're saying. But what you're saying is the same thing that all the other white presidents have said in private. They are, or at least done in private, and that's be the president for white America. All right? That's what all these white presidents have done in the past, have been the president for white America, because all of them, including Barack, have upheld white supremacy. So this is not, you know, what Donald Trump did is not unique.
Man, hey, black folk used to love Trump, though, before he ran.
That's because we didn't understand his policies.
Yeah, nigga rolling hard, stacking paper like Trump.
But that's
and I ain't give a fuck. I told you that from the jump.
But that's because we didn't know who he was as a person. We didn't know what kind of divider he was, what kind of person he was. When you start telling a police officer, when you put him in the car, you know, just you ain't got to be gentle. You be a little rough with him, you know. That's dog whistling.
Man, he said back in the days.
That's dog whistling to be rough on black folks.
He said back in the days, we would have beat him up.
Who was he talking about?
He was talking about the protesters at his rallies.
Oh, yeah.
And look at how he used his power. When he was going in, when any time that was a situation where black people were protesting or whatever, it was send in the troops, do whatever you got to do, bring order immediately.
Yeah, law and order, yeah, law and order.
Yeah, the law and order president.
But when the white folks were storming capitals and all that, he's sitting back chilling.
When the white folks was tearing up Portland, when the white folks was blending in with black folks, talking about George Floyd, and it was like, why are you spray painting? There was like peaceful, you know, Black Lives Matter folk, and it's like, who are y'all dressing all black with the umbrellas?
They was trying to fire that shit up.
Was Antifa. Those are Marxists.
It's so crazy though, man. Because when people got on those masks and stuff, you don't know who they represent.
Yeah,
you don't know.
I know who they don't represent.
I saw police officers riding around with a whole truck full of bricks, and all the bricks looked exactly alike. Yeah. During the protest. What are police officers
That's
doing
crazy, yeah.
riding around
They're trying to fire this
with
shit
a
up.
Truck full of bricks?
I feel like the media was so against Trump that he's damned if you do, damned if you don't. For example, somebody might give you statistics like, man, he gave the most millions to HBCUs, you know, more than Barack did. Barack was burning feeding.
That transaction has not been completed yet.
Oh, he hadn't gotten the bread.
Damn it, Willie.
Yeah.
He ain't getting the bread. Okay.
No.
But like stuff like that, right? Stuff that's like lowest black unemployment. Somebody can look at it from a different angle.
I gotta disagree with that shit, man. I gotta disagree with that. The lowest black unemployment was because of Trump?
No, it was because of Barack Obama. That he got the residuals. He got the residuals from the Obama administration.
He reaped the benefits of that shit, in other words.
Or how about this? Like, for example, people sometimes ask me, what has he done for the brown community? And I hit them with general stuff. And it throws them off because I thought you was going to talk about immigration. We've been trained to be single issue voters. We've been trained to only worry about immigration, DACA, Dreamers, amnesty. However, if I hit somebody with a statistic like, well, you know, the dollar was strong or anything.
Yeah, but what the fuck does that have to do with Donald Trump?
Well, okay, hold on. Let's just say I lost my train of thought. But let's just say I was to give a statistic on something general. Good. Like, for example, I mean, shit. You know, just something good that's in general. Like, we ain't had no new wars or something. It's like, what that got to do with Mexicans and our people? It's like, you live here, you're American, we got some peace. You know what I'm saying?
You know what it is, Chingo? I almost called you Pedro.
Hey, that's all good. I have my government name.
But
that shit ain't, you know, funny, Willie.
That's my government name.
I know, Pete, but it's Pedro. Still, though, like, yeah.
I don't give a damn. I'm the third. I got my granddaddy.
Now you're making me lose my train of thought.
That's my fault.
I think the reason why a lot of us people in this country who are not white think along the single issue line oftentimes, like immigration or black or unemployment, whatever, not unemployment, but racial discrimination. That is because this is something that we wake up with every day that don't go away. This is one of the first challenges that when we wake up, we have to face. White folks don't have to worry about that shit. That's why they can focus on, well, what about my money? Well, what about what's going on? We need a wall over there for the border. They can think about other shit that they don't have to think of. They don't have to wake up thinking about race. They don't have to wake up thinking about a green card. They don't have to wake up thinking about all of these type of things that other people in this country wake up daily thinking about. Mm. Because they got it made in the shade.
Got citizen privilege. I'd argue that I have more free speech than a white man does. It's some shit I could say a white man can't say.
Say something that a white man can't say.
Arguably, right? If a white man says anything like, hey, we got to be America first, we got to make it great again. When was it ever great? What you mean great? Are you talking about back when, you know, they were spraying people down in the road with hoses and putting sicking dogs on? Is that what you mean great?
Yeah,
you know, it's like,
that's exactly
I'm just saying great again. Like, well, when was it great? When was it great for us? It's almost like, you know what? I'm going to just be quiet.
Yeah.
And,
when was America great for the Hispanic community? I want to know.
When was it great for the Hispanic community?
Is it now?
Probably, yeah. Actually, yeah, I'd argue that now is probably the best time. Only because I feel like, man, it's 2021. We've come a long way.
Man, we still the ain't came there
fountain,
yet.
The only water fountain I can't drink out of is the vaccinated water fountain. That's the only one I'm not allowed.
the fuck, man?
In New York, man, they got the you got to go around back, pick up your food. You can't sit at the lunch counter, man. If you they got the vax or you unvax. You can't walk in without showing your papers. You got to show ID and vax passport.
Wow.
In New York. And they just nullified it in California. They tried to pass it.
They can't pass it here.
It didn't go through.
Yeah.
And if they did,
Hot Wheels
probably
say
under.
Nah.
Hot Wheels.
Nah. You went to a private preparatory school in New Jersey.
Yes, sir.
What was that experience like? And what city was that?
Hightstown, New Jersey.
That's like 24 Princeton. Minutes, about 25 minutes from Trenton.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, that's,
I don't remember.
That's close to Trenton.
You heard of Hightstown?
Yeah.
What? No shit. It's a little bitty town.
Yeah.
So I grew up here. I went to Highland Middle School off of 610. It was like a Vanguard program. This lady showed up. She had 15 letters for 15 minority students, right? And the letter basically said, hey, we're going to have a seminar. Bring your parents so we could talk to you how you can go to this prep school and maybe get a full ride.
It was academic. It wasn't sports?
Nah, hell nah. I'm not athletic like that.
Okay.
It was more like, it's called ABC, A Better Chance. So it's this organization.
ABC.
I like that.
Yeah, and I think Oprah donated. A lot of people were donating to that organization. So anyway, all my friends, I was like, man, you seen this? It's like, out of state by ourselves? Hell no. Nah. Everybody ripped it up. I crumbled mine up, put it in my backpack. I get home, somehow my nosy-ass older sister, she went through, found a paper, and she's like, oh, what is this? I was like, it's out of state. Prep school, nah, I'm
said
good.
That in Spanish, right?
Nah, she said in English.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so we went. We went to the little seminar. You got this old white man in front of this podium showing us these pictures of these beautiful campuses saying, we know the Hispanic community is tightly knit. Y'all might not want to send y'all son or daughter, but it's a good opportunity. Whoop-de-whoop. So I purposely didn't fill out the application on time because I didn't want to go. I was 12 years old. I'm not going to go live somewhere far by myself. So my sister remembered, again, my nosy-ass sister. She still be on my ass to this day. She's like, oh, look, it looks like you just missed the deadline. I'm like, yeah, sorry. And she's like, well, let me call them. See what they say. She got on the phone. Hey, my little brother's here. Looks like he didn't turn it in. They're like, they say you got to finish the essay and answer them questions, and I'm going to do the other part, like the basic Social Security number shit, and we're going to see. So I got into this one school in North Carolina called Asheville. They didn't give me a full ride. And then I got into this other school called Petty in Hightstown, New Jersey. They gave me the full ride. I'm little bitty, man. I'm just about to turn 13. I ain't never washed my own drawers. Like, I'm like, I need my parents to remind me to do my homework. How's this going to work? So they said, look, we're going to fly out with you. We got to leave. But in case you don't like it, at least you tried it, and then fuck it, you drop out, we bring you home, you go to Milby High or something. And I'm like, all right. Actually, I was going to Booker T. Washington. Like, I was in the pre-program right before school started, and they pulled me out of that because I went to New Jersey. So we get there, culture shock. Where I grew up on the Southeast, I wasn't around, it was just minorities. I went around white people. I'd never seen a Jewish person. I didn't know nobody from Asia. I get out there. They're listening to music I was listening to y'all. I get out there, I'm listening to some other shit. I'm like, what the hell is this? They had more gardeners than teachers. I mean, the campus was beautiful. And so in the beginning—
They had more gardeners than teachers.
Yeah, they would brag about that shit too, like manicured lawns. So the first year and a half, 2 years, I felt like a lab rat. I felt like I was only there as a quota. I felt like I was only there to make the rich kids experience—
At 13 years old.
Yeah, I felt like I was making the rich kids' experience more authentic. Like, we even have some Mexicans here. We got, like, 3 Puerto Ricans. We got a handful of black kids. And those were all my friends because we clicked up. It was like, where you from? And I'm from Miami. Where you from? I'm from Philly. Where you from? I'm from Brooklyn. Okay. What kind of music you like? You know, I listen to this, this, and this. Bet. You know, we finna sit at the same lunch table because I don't know what these people talking about. So maybe around, like, junior year, my mind clicked and I started telling myself, you know what? Yeah, you might be here on scholarship, but all this is here for you. Like, you deserve all this. This is here for you just like anybody else. Take advantage. You know what I mean? Be a leader. Get more involved. So, boom, I became like the resident assistant in the dorm. Like, if the freshman needed some help, I'm there as, like, hey, man, I'm the
so
senior.
So you stayed there for a long ass time.
I lived 4 years.
4 years?
I did all 4 years.
Now, you said that you felt like you was a lab rat and you was there to make a quota. Did you come to this revelation later in life, or was you cognizant of that while you was 13 years old?
No, I think at the time, I just had a little chip on my shoulder. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I just, like, insecure. You insecure, you young, you don't know no better. It's all in your perspective. It's all how you look at it. So if you want to walk around like, man, these motherfuckers don't understand me because I'm Mexican. Or you see how he asked, you saw how the teacher asked me that question? You know what I mean? And somehow, some way, I just say, you know what? Let's make some friends. You know, let's enjoy the ride. Let's take advantage. And then that became, like, it became from, I don't want to be here. I'm, like, depressed and homesick to, I think I want to apply to colleges out here because all my friends staying out here. And, damn, I'm going to miss y'all. I don't want to leave. So now I'm applying to them colleges. My family's like, nah, you got to apply to these Texas colleges. You did four. Come closer. So then I went to San Antonio for college. Because yeah. I still didn't want to be, like, all up under my parents. So I was like, I don't want to do U of H. And so I started DJing. And
that's where I was going. And then you started DJing. And how did you get to rap?
Man. So, all right. So I was going to Trinity University. Somehow I stumbled across, they got a radio program on campus. We got a radio station. Like, yeah, it's public radio. It's college radio. And you could take some classes, but you got to have a minor in communications. And I was like, can I have a hip-hop show? They're like, well, you got to take the classes and maybe pitch it. So I went to the program director, and I was like, hey, I want to do a hip-hop show. He's like, okay, well, how's Sunday night? I'm like, shit, this motherfucker say yes. So next thing you know, they're bumping us on campus. Now they're bumping us in the city. We were on a Sunday night with all the Mexicans, the whole hood, south side San Antonio. That's when they were cruising their cars on Military Drive. So I was playing the local up-and-coming artists. I had, like, this is what I would do. I would go to Southwest Wholesale, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd go meet with, like, Robert Gilliman or Ghetto. And I'd go get some posters from my prize box so I can be like, hey, caller number 9, you win. Whoop-de-whoop. I'd get singles from artists. I was just observing as a college student, like, yo, people getting deals. People out here hitting the road. They doing promo. So then in San Antonio, I came up with a hustle where I'd hit the record stores and I'd hit, like, up-and-coming labels from Houston. Like, let's say Big Pokey got a project coming out and I'd hit Chevis Entertainment or somebody. Just labels that might not even be around anymore, right? And I would make these displays with the posters. I'd cut them out. Kind of like Lump here in Houston. I don't know if y'all remember Lump. So I'd put up the posters and shit and I'd try to get some bread out the labels. Like, hey, man, you know, I can make these displays and whoop-de-woo. And so then our college radio show started blowing up more. We started, like, I'd get interviews with, like, Big Mo, Rest in Peace, Lil Flip stopped by, you know, people coming by freestyling. And from there, you know, I just started, like, thinking, okay, maybe this could be, maybe I can get my foot in the door. Just be a DJ, maybe get distribution, do, like DJ Clue had his mixtape album. I'm like, I don't know.
So at what point do you pick up the pen and start writing these lyrics and going to the studio?
Well, I went from, so good question. I would freestyle on the radio from time to time, but I started networking with the local studios. And I would basically say, hey, man, I could do some funny shit. Man, let me do some characters, some voices. Y'all need a skit. You ain't got no skits on y'all, man. You ain't got an intermission. Oh, man, look, check it. Let me just jump in. If you don't like it, delete it. And they'd be laughing, and they'd be like, man, what the fuck was that? I did this one character, and I was like, yo, when I do that, that's Chingo Bling. And they're like, what? I was like, that's Chingo Bling. They're like, man, what the hell did that? They were laughing at the name. I was like, okay, I got something. So I started doing skits for local artists, and then And then they invite me to rap on some shit. I'll do a funny little rap. Next thing you know, I got enough freestyles and raps to put out a demo. That turns into a mixtape. Next thing you know, I got two mixtapes. Next thing you know, I'm hitting another flea market. My family start backing me up. Now we got the P.O. box. Now somebody ordered a shirt in Oregon. People on Napster uploading my stuff. So the high school kid, like, my humor was like 8th grade, high school type of humor. You know what I mean? So the kids was loving it. And that's how it spread.
So when do you bring the tamale game in?
I would say early, like as soon as I started, because I didn't want to rap about gangster shit because it wasn't really real to me. You know, I went to prep school. I went to college. I'm not out there selling dope.
Boarding school at that.
Boarding school, exactly. Damn. Boarding school. So my dad would sell tamales at work. My mom would make them. So I just found that little parallel where it's like, man, at the end of the day, that's one way you can always pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Like, that's a hustle. Like, worst case scenario, you could always go get some masa, some pork. You could whip that shit
up. Masa and some pork.
You could sling it in dozens. And I got to
say, tamales, not tamales. It's tamales. Tamales.
How you say it?
Tamales.
I just told you how to say it, man.
Willie, stop.
God damn, man. This is what I'm talking about,
tamales.
Bro.
Tamales. Willie, you're not hitting it. How you say it, dog?
Tamales.
Okay, I got it.
And I'm saying,
you
I'm
said
saying
it like you're trying to score on
the
low. Hey, man, you got some tamales.
You got tamales.
So now, you're rapping. Everybody knows you. You know, at least around here, people know who you are. You got some regional success and all that stuff. And you know, people are learning who you are. You know, nationally. So at what point you say, okay, I think I want to do comedy now?
Oh man. Well, comedy was maybe about 6 years ago. And I just got the opportunity. Music was kind of slow. You know what I'm saying? The game had changed. Record stores had gone away.
Yes.
The streaming programs are screwing us with this 0.001 of a penny. Even though, thankfully, my old catalog still brings in some bread every month, thankfully. But I just felt like I was burnt out. That's the best way to describe it, man. I was just like, I was fed up with like janky promoters. The way my business was being run at the time, I found myself like almost like getting down on myself when some of the shit wasn't even my fault. Like, say I'm in Nebraska doing a show somewhere and I'm like, why they got 10 opening acts? Why the sound sound like this? Like, this ain't what I signed up for. You know, I don't want to be here. This shit is lame. And I just started stepping away from like, you know what? I'm not doing no more shows. I'm not dealing with no more promoters.
And so when does the comedy buzz hit you? When does it?
So about 6 years ago, my buddy, I had already started doing YouTube. I had already started doing skits, like slowly just going viral in different ways. So I was slowly building that bridge.
Yeah.
A buddy of mine, he's like, hey, man, I'm going to start putting together these comedy shows. And I was like, man, that shit is hard because I had tried it one time at that point. I was like, man, that shit's scary, bro. I bombed. And he's like, all right, well, if you ever want to get up, do 10 minutes, you know, bring you some merch or something, you know, make it worth your time and give it a shot. And I was like, yes, absolutely. I would love to just try and practice. And just started peeping the scene, just expanding, like, my network, just dealing with different kind of artists. You know what I'm saying? Like, you just go from one type of ego to a different type of ego.
So where's the first comedy spot you played? Place, period. Where did you go tell the first public joke?
I think when I was hosting, I hosted an event. I did terribly. I think it's kind of like Third Ward Midtown. It's called Red Cat
Red
Jazz.
Cat Cafe.
Yeah. I think that's the first time I ever went up there and tried it. And I was naive. I was like, I've seen this shit done before. I'm a fan of comedy. I got some ideas.
Yeah.
And you go up there and you just don't know that there's different variables. Like, look, man, this is how you should have treated this room and this audience. You just didn't know no better. It's not that you suck. It's just you didn't know. So you slowly start to get that wisdom.
So when you jumped on stage for the first time, you was a fan of comedy, but you didn't study the acts, how they got on stage, how they delivered their stuff, and you didn't talk to them, any of that. You just jumped on stage and did your thing.
Yeah, I'd have to say, yeah, the first time hosting like that, yeah.
I know, because I did the same thing with rap and got my ass booed to...
Oh, shit.
Damn. Hawaii or somewhere.
Hey, joke's on them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, your first gig, you did 10 minutes?
Well, because
normally y'all do five. You start off with 5 minutes in comedy.
Well, the very first time I was hosting, so I was having to go up a couple minutes here, a couple minutes there. So, yeah, right. I wasn't ready for all that.
Right.
But to answer your question, yeah, further down the road, when I started taking it a little bit more serious, I understood, look, man, just try to get you a five-minute little set or something that works, that's polished, that's edited, it's effective, and then build from there. Mm-hmm. And then slowly you can start editing, taking stuff out, rearranging.
Yeah.
I love it though, man. It's a rush, man. It's such a high.
You love it over hip hop?
I love performing comedy more than performing music.
Yes. Me too.
Yeah,
and it has a lot to do with the fact
you can't tell jokes, man. Your jokes are horrible, man.
Man, I'm way funnier than you, bro, and you just won't admit it.
Give me one. Give me a one joke.
Hit us man. You ain't.
Give me one joke. I dare you. I dare you to tell one joke that'll make people laugh. Give me one. Just one. I just said millions of jokes in the world. Give me one.
Okay. That was this truck driver, right? And he had a sidekick with him. And he was trying to get this job, right? So he go in there and into the spot, man. He like, man, I got my buddy with me. You got to go. He say, well, we only need one truck driver. We can't use two. He say, well, me and Leroy, we've been driving together for 17 years, and I just can't see me riding without Leroy. A white man said, okay, well, there's a shortage of truck drivers, so here's the test. You're going down a 180-degree drop. Your brakes go out. It's a 2,000 drop on both sides of the bridge, and it's a truck jackknife across the bridge. You doing 98 miles an hour. Quick. What's the first thing you gonna do? He said, well, first thing I'm gonna do is I'm gonna wake up old Leroy. He said, well, why you gonna do that? He said, cause me and Leroy been riding together for 17 years. He ain't never seen no motherfucking wreck like we fixing to have. I'm just better than him, bro. And he just won't admit it.
Oh, man.
What the fuck, man?
We're checking his phone now. Everybody.
So one time there was this dude, right? He was drunk.
Today's date, August 31st, the year 2021, our Lord, Scarface, Brad Jordan, just told the worst fucking joke in the history of jokes.
There you go.
Okay, go ahead.
So that's one time, Willie?
That's just one of many. I know you got way more.
Spaz, man. Let's hear a joke from a professional. What was your first joke? Can you remember the first one that you got him with? I mean, you got him.
Oh, man, I had a couple. I told a joke about smoking weed with B-Real in California. And, I thought it wasn't shit. I'm like, yeah, fuck it. Shit. Y'all got fire? We got fire. Hit that motherfucker. And then me and my homeboy, when we left, we're at the train stop. We're at the train stop. I'm feeling like the weed didn't affect me, right? I smoked weed before. This ain't nothing. Now, it's nighttime. We're at the train stop. The train's passing. I'm in the driver's seat. My boy right here. All of a sudden, we start hearing like this loud rumble. I'm like, man, the trees are shaking. There's a cop behind us now.
God damn.
So now we nervous. The cop hitting his lights on the train. He's hitting the lights on the train. I look at my homeboy like, man, whatever it is, bro, this shit out there is trying to get us. So I realized, man, I had the car in park, my foot on the gas. It was RPMs was, man, it was me. I was high. I was high, I didn't know. But yeah, I cut that joke. That's one of my little beginners.
Yeah.
It's just hard to tell one-liners and shit when you ain't really on stage.
So this didn't happen for real. It's just something.
No, it did.
That happened for real.
It did. A lot of my stuff, it has to have some truth to it. You know how they say, it's funny because it's true. And a lot of comedians, shit don't be funny because it ain't true.
Okay.
Because you just can't perform it the same way if it ain't really happen. Right. Just like in rap, I guess.
Yeah.
Tingo Blame, man. It's been a
beautiful... I got another joke, Willie.
Jesus. Oh, man. Go ahead, man.
So that was this kid, right? This old man had this dog, man. This dog was a trained fucking killer, man. He'd fucking kill anything, right? And he took his dog into the bar and they got a drink. And he was telling the bartender about his dog. He said, man, I got a little boy that's going to be crossing here about 15 minutes. Got a little orange dog. Said, I bet you he can't beat him. He say, bullshit. And then, you know, sure as shit stink. 15 minutes later, here come this little boy with this little orange dog. Man, he said, Rover, kill. Dog ran out there, man, jumped up over that little boy dog, man. The little boy dog looked up at him and cut him in half. He picked up both pieces of his dog and he was like, man, this was the champion breed of Malinois. They don't, little boy, what kind of dog is that you got? He said, well, before I cut his tail and painted him orange, he was an alligator.
Oh, shit. Goddamn.
Give me the goddamn phone.
It is the year, 2021, year of our Lord.
2021, our Lord. At 4:16 p.m. on August 31st.
Scarface outdid himself.
Scarface just told the second worst motherfucking joke I've ever heard in my life. Man.
That guy's a fucking hater, man. Chingo, how can people get in contact with you, man?
Man, I'm on Instagram, at RealChingoBling. My website's ChingoBling.com. But yeah, all them other pages, you just, you know, Google.
Man, we really appreciate you coming
man, thank
out,
you
man.
Guys, man.
Man, and thank fuck, you for man. Your contribution, man. You know, you're a very unique individual.
One of
very
my favorite people in the world,
very
bro.
Talented.
I say that every time.
And a good dude, man. I mean, it's hard to believe you're a fucking Trump supporter,
bro.
It's just fucking hard. That's why I say they're going to try to...
kidding me?
That's why I say they're going to reach out to you, bro, because you're not... that standard, you know, like, and that's
what one,
that you're not stereotypical.
Mitt Romney.
And that's one of the hard things about them with their sale, with their pitch, is that, you know, they're missing a whole lot of people because of that that one direction that they have. They're missing a whole lot of people, and they're gonna come
Mitt,
for you.
Mitt Romney's gonna be the president, bro.
When?
Soon?
Hell no.
Man, Biden. Okay, Trump, Biden.
If Trump was president, bro, anybody can be president.
I'm telling you, man. Like, Joe Biden, man, listen, let me say this, man, and then we can take this out. But...
Kamala finna be president.
I hope not. But listen to what I'm saying, bro. Like, Afghanistan got people coming into the United States, yeah? They coming here. Dude... We gonna have to be mindful that a motherfucker can just walk into the goddamn mall and just detonate.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, they keep. I'm gonna say this real quick because I know y'all got stuff to do, but they keep saying the war ended. No, the war has begun.
The war has begun.
So they created a terrorist state over there. It's gonna spill over to Pakistan. China already back in the Taliban. So is Russia.
Oh shit!
Pakistan's gonna bring that pressure to India. That's one of our allies. China don't like India because they kind of neighbors. China's over there trying to get the mining rights for the lithium that we need for electric vehicle batteries, which our leadership is sending them jobs over there as well. So Afghanistan, they surrounded by Russia, Iran, Pakistan. You know what I'm saying? A bunch of gang of motherfuckers don't like us. So for example, let's just say I'm China. I don't like America. I'm going to go holler at my boy Taliban. Hey, man, what's up, bro? Man, what's up, T-Ban? Hey, what's up, China? Man, you fuck with them? Man, hell no. I
ain't
like the white
boys. Cubs,
man, they Christian. They Western Christian tradition. We don't like that shit. Bet, man, check this out, man. Y'all got the minerals, huh? Yeah, that's that lithium. Okay. Y'all want to be in charge of this government? You know what I'm saying? Y'all want to be... Man, look, we'll have you to where you respected on the world stage, bro. Y'all can have Sharia law. Y'all can spread that shit. But I need to put this battery in your back so you throw the rock at America and China sitting back here like this.
Hiding
so basically hand. What America has done throughout history. Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Chingo Bling.
And also, for the record, man, if Tulsi Gabbard, the Democrat, had gotten a nomination, she probably would have got my vote.
This episode was produced by A-King and brought to you by
the Black Effect Podcast Network
and iHeartRadio.